All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Good afternoon, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you, as always, by the Toyota BZ4X. And my goodness, folks, this doesn't happen very often, but as you'll see in a few minutes, it's a bit of a scrambly start here. I just got back from the Abbotsford Center, so I didn't have any of my stuff open. I didn't even have my scripts open, but I think I can do it off memory at this point, because I like talking about the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. Or not having your tabs open. The BZ4X can get you through that too. It can get you through anything that you need it to get you through. So there it is. Toyota BZ4X, presenting sponsor of Canucks Conversation. My name is Diego Jolly. That is Harmon Dial. Our technical producer is Grady Sass. And I'm just happy I'm here, folks. Like, honestly, Harm, I know I was telling you about it. I made the decision to go to Abbotsford today to be in attendance for Jonathan Lekaramäki's first practice as a Vancouver Canuck. No, I guess Abbotsford Canuck, but made the decision to go out there, and it was a dicey decision because I was humming down the highway. I will be honest, I was speeding today. And it was like, it was 1:45 and I still wasn't home. And obviously the show starts at 2. It was dicey. It was very, very dicey. But I made it. I made it in time for the show, and I'm very happy to be here.
Well, what happened? Because I thought their practice was originally supposed to be 10:30.
It was supposed to be 10:30. And then they did a second session that started at 12, and that's when Elias Pettersson was on. So I was like, okay, well, I'd like to talk to him too, like make the most of the Abbotsford trip. I waited a little bit, but then I had to get moving, and then I got moving. And the thing that pisses me off the most is the one thing that I really wanted to do on this trip was get gas. I didn't have time to get gas. I had to just drive home, and like, I don't need gas. I'm at like a half a tank, but when you're in Abbotsford, you get gas. Like, that's what you do. You get gas when you're in Abbotsford. And I'm a little bothered that I wasn't able to get gas, but it was a good trip nonetheless.
Yeah, especially you got to fill up before the carbon tax. So got to make sure you get it done this week.
That's yeah, why that's you... topic one on today's show is the carbon tax.
That's why you drive the BZ electric there, Quad.
That's right. There's a great reason to get yourself a BZ4X. Okay, people are already talking about it. So for those in the YouTube live show, I'll talk about it right away. Yeah, people are always saying get something else in the background. I found it. I said it on yesterday's show. Found this life-size Roberto Luongo growth chart in my childhood bedroom. I unwrapped this thing, Harm. This thing has been wrapped in a tube for 14 years, I figured out, because the last time that I can tell by his pads too, like this came out in like 2009 based on his pad setup. And you can see my height there. I don't know if you could see it per se, but 4'5" was where I was coming in last time I used that thing to measure myself. Yeah, 4'5" quads. I'm thinking I had to be 9, 10 years old at the time. But I said I would stand next to it as well, but I'm not going to. Well, I could, but it wouldn't make much sense because for podcasting reasons, it's off the ground. So technically that's higher than 6'3". So like that's up there. That's a higher chart. As you see, it's at the top of the doorway. And my doorway is not 6'3", despite what some people may think.
That's just an excuse for us to not get your official height, isn't it?
Well, no, I'll go stand next to it, but I'm going to come in at like 9-year-old quads height again. I'll show you right now.
Wow, that's tough.
See, you can't figure it out based on that.
You're barely up to his shoulder.
Yeah, I'm like 5'1" on that. Okay.
Which isn't too far off real life.
So for those on the podcast, I apologize, which is something we often do on this show when we get a little off track. And of course, we're starting the show by doing that. And I'm sorry, folks. It literally just comes down to I was in traffic, or there was no traffic, but I was on the road. I didn't know if I'd make it in time, and I made it. Didn't get to do much show prep, but I am very prepared to talk about Jonathan LeCaramacchi, which we will do in the third segment. Harm, first, we need to talk about last night's game against the LA Kings as the Vancouver Canucks fall by a final score of 3-2. And of course, it is brought to you by our friends at Four Winds Brewing. More specifically, brought to you by the Featherweight IPA. If you're looking for a nice hoppy beer but still want something light, then look no further than the Four Winds Featherweight IPA. At just 4.5%, this incredibly light IPA is packed full of tropical and citrusy goodness. Available now at liquor stores across BC or through the Four Winds online shop for home delivery anywhere in BC at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Okay, Harm, Canucks fall to the LA Kings on home ice. They got down to a 3-1 deficit. They made it interesting in the end. Despite the Kings' best wishes to play boring hockey for 60 minutes, the Canucks did make this game interesting, nearly pulled off the comeback. What were your thoughts on last night's game?
Yeah, a number of things to take away from that game. First of all, I don't think the Canucks played that poorly overall. It really felt like one of those games where for both sides, most of the game, they were outstanding defensively. And it was funny, at one point in the second period, I was starting to track any time a player would get the puck in space, it would be one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and a guy's ready to stick check you. Honestly, there was no time and space for either team to make creative plays, to get to the inside, to get quality looks from the slot. And it really felt like one of those games where the Canucks didn't make many mistakes, but whenever it happened, it ended up in the back of the net. Plus, they had a couple, I think, extra bounces go against them compared to LA. It really felt like one of those coin flip type games that could have easily gone either way, and just LA got an extra bounce. Vancouver made an extra mistake. I think Vancouver's PK was also really sharp, but ultimately, if you look at the negative where they fell short, I think we can all agree that the top six in particular had a really difficult time generating meaningful offense. The first goal that they got, of course, came from Sam Lafferty in the bottom six. It felt like they were at the mercy of LA making mistakes to create their own looks. Pedersen, Miller, and Besser combined for just one shot on goal at 5-on-5. The entire top six as a whole combined for one high danger chance at 5-on-5. They only generated one shot in the first 15 minutes of that third period, but trailing by two goals, that's of course not nearly enough. But the ironic thing is we discussed the lack of offense from the top six and needing more from them, and yet the funny thing is, even when you look at their underlying numbers, they're pretty dominant because they also didn't give anything up defensively. So I think it, again, just kind of goes to show that, yeah, there are concerning signs in terms of you go down and they didn't generate enough offense and trying to mount a comeback, but they didn't play all that poorly. And I'm not panicking or worrying about this loss.
Captain Canuck in the YouTube live chat said, "We didn't get outplayed, just outscored." And Rick Tocchet described this game as a coin flip as well. Early on, I'd say, especially, like, it felt like the Canucks were the better team in that game. Again, didn't get outplayed, but just got outscored, right? So again, this is something that LA's been doing all season long. They play that suffocating style. They wait for you to make the mistake, and they score some scrambly goals. Like, they're not a highly skilled, high-flying team. They work really hard. They work really hard, and that's their brand of hockey. They wait for you to make a mistake, and when you do, they are often ready to pounce, and obviously there's some power play help there as well with their second goal. I just watched this game, and aside from the fact that it was super boring, you don't want LA in round one. Like you don't want to face LA in round one. I think they're a team that's going to be okay in the playoffs. Like, they're going to do fine in the playoffs. My take has always been that you're not going to win a cup if you don't have a good goaltender, and I don't think they have a good goaltender. Like, I really don't think Cam Talbot is that good. I really think he's benefiting from the system that he's playing in, and how could you not? They're a really good defensive team, but I think push come to shove in the playoffs, they're going to eventually get exposed. I just don't know if that'll be round one against the Canucks with how these teams have matched up so far this season.
Yeah, and of course, that's where the Canucks didn't even get to take advantage of that, of having Thatcher Demko, right? Because he's, of course, hurt. So that's another thing you have to keep in mind. One thing to keep in mind as far as the playoffs go, especially as you play tight defensive teams, is for most of this season, the Canucks have been so dominant about scoring early and getting that first goal. And I think we've reached the point where we're really confident that when Vancouver gets that first goal, that they defend really well, and not that they're going to hold on to a low scoring leads and win that way, but they just seem comfortable in those situations. They can add to that lead. They can sort of dictate on their own terms. The flip side of that is that we haven't seen this team have to trail in too many games, especially in multi-goal situations. And that's where I am curious to see, does this team have enough juice, that extra offensive gear, especially at 5-on-5, to mount off potential comebacks? Because in the playoffs, especially because you're going to be playing tougher opponents, but also you're going to run into situations where bounces go against you, where you get unlucky and the other team gets one or two goals, and a team like LA or even Vegas, when they're at their best, they're just going to park the bus defensively. And so can you cut through? Because that's something where when you look at some of the other top teams in the West, a team like the Colorado Avalanche, for example, we saw it when these two teams last met. They have that firepower where that MacKinnon line, when they hit their stride, it feels like they are in turbo mode. Or the Edmonton Oilers, even if you have a 2 or 3 goal lead against them, it feels like they can always go nuclear because of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Or even a team like the Dallas Stars, that they don't have a McDavid or a MacKinnon type player, but they have scoring on all four lines, and they are so dominant at scoring that way. And from Vancouver's perspective, it's not that they have struggled this year to score goals. Obviously, they've put the puck in the back of the net a lot, but a lot of it has been sort of predicated on historically high shooting percentage. It hasn't necessarily been, we rack up a ton of shots and a ton of high danger chances. So that's a trend to watch for in the playoffs. But again, I'm not overly worried big picture about what we saw in that game.
Yeah. The one thing I want to talk about was Todd Lafferty's goal there. My goodness, going right from the boards, right to the front of the net, and then finishing the night with 8 hits. Todd Lafferty, yeah, or Sam Bertuzzi, whatever you want to call him. My goodness, he looked good on that goal. And again, like, that was one thing that I think if they win this game, it's a storyline we're talking about is, hey, that fourth line that's basically the band of misfit toys, they came out and scored, right? Like, and yeah, they did it in a really, really nice fashion, obviously, as I hinted at with my nicknames there. But it was something that I wanted to just talk about, was just how good Sam Lafferty was in last night's game. And he's a guy that, look, we know he started the season super hot and then just kind of fell off a cliff from there and really just played like a fourth liner again, right? Like he wasn't bad per se, but he just wasn't as effective as he was earlier in the season. And again, when we talk about guys like Lindholm, Mikheyev, these guys that you're hoping that can come alive during the playoffs, I think Sam Lafferty's one that the Canucks are also going to be hoping can kind of get hot at the right time. Okay, let's bring in our guest because he talked about the game and he'll continue talking about the game with us. And Harmon, we can pick up anything else you want to talk about in the anyone else segment of our show. But let's get to Jeff Patterson, who is brought to you by Greta, the home of our electric watch parties. See, I'm just all off today. Greta is our spot to chill pregame, postgame, and all through the offseason as well. Check out Greta Bar YVR today. And folks, I'm hinting at it. Last game of the season, looks like we're doing another watch party at Greta. So make sure you get your tickets when they're available. And folks, I'll tell you when they're available, but mark it in your calendars. That last day, if people are asking you to hang out on that last day, tell them you've got the spot. And that spot is Greta to watch the last game of the season. This is an interesting thing. Bring in Jeff. This is my first question for Jeff. Interesting thing. Irfan Gafar tweeted this today. Jeff, I'm not sure if you saw this, but the playoffs are now scheduled or rumored to be scheduled on April 20th, which would be 2 days after the Canucks play. That's a Saturday night. It's hockey night in Canada. Originally, it was supposed to start Monday, Tuesday on the 22nd and 23rd. We're now looking at 20th, 21st. Are the Canucks going to get screwed by the NHL here? Like, are the Canucks going to have to play 2 days at game one of the playoffs, 2 days after their last game of the season?
Yeah, quite possibly. And it's important to note, too, that they're in Winnipeg for game 82. And so, you know, if they fly home after a game in Winnipeg, they're going to get home early in the morning. If they overnight in Winnipeg, then travel day on a Friday and you're playing on Saturday, that doesn't seem ideal. Really interesting, if you look at the NHL schedule on the 18th of April, I think there's six games. They're all Western Conference teams. So how about the East starts the playoffs on the 20th and gives all the Western teams a little bit of a breather there? Look, Saturday is hockey night, as you said. U.S. national television networks have adopted weekend programming down the stretch as well. It always seemed a little strange that they would let a weekend slide by without anything. So I'm not surprised at this. And in fact, Rogers has been running promos that the playoffs will start on the 20th. So you're right. I think originally it was going to be the 22nd, but kind of feels like everything's getting bumped up a little bit here. And we'll see how that impacts the Canucks and other teams. But it does feel like, and look, you can't control where you're going to end your schedule. A couple of years ago, it was St. Louis. I remember I was out on the road, the final game in St. Louis. Last year, it was Arizona. This year, it's Winnipeg. But the difference is the Canucks are going to the playoffs, and they play all year, and they may win the division. And the reward would be you have to hustle home from Winnipeg to get ready for your first playoff game. Not ideal in the way of scheduling, but got to deal with the curveballs as they come at you. We always talk about playoffs. You're going to deal with adversity. You might deal with adversity right off the hop with the scheduling of game number one. So let's see how it goes here. But I did look at the league schedule on the final night of the regular season. It's all Western teams. So maybe the East can get the jump on the playoffs and at least buy everybody out West one more day.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to go about that. Because that's the thing, right, is like all the Eastern teams, if it's Hockey Night in Canada, you want a late game, right? And if the playoffs started today, the Canucks and Golden Knights are the only series in the NHL that is going to take place in the Pacific time zone. Edmonton, LA, it would be in Edmonton for game one, so that's Mountain. And I'm looking at it and say, I would not be shocked, and I'm throwing it out there early, I would not be shocked if the Canucks and Golden Knights, or whoever they face in round one, the Canucks that is, are told, hey, we need a late game on Hockey Night in Canada and our national broadcast. So sorry, not sorry. You're going to start the playoffs on the 20th.
Certainly, like the Oilers can start in the late window as well, even in the Mountain Times. I mean, they do that every Saturday. You know, the other thing too is, and you can't bank on this, but you can get an early game that goes late in the playoffs, right? Like you can get triple overtime on night number one. So you just never know about TV windows and that kind of stuff. But yes, certainly a storyline worth following here, just because we know, even though they didn't get the X beside their name last night, the Canucks will be there when the playoffs start. It's just a question of when do the playoffs start.
Yeah, and they didn't get the X next to their name last night. So last night's game, Jeff, just some of your takeaways that you wanted to talk about from last night's loss.
Yeah, I agree with Harm. They didn't play poorly. They just didn't play well enough to win. And against this Los Angeles team, this is three games now. The Kings have opened the scoring in all three. And the minute they do that, they get to dictate. They kind of dig in even more so, and make you come at them. And I thought the Canucks did a nice job of that after the Kings had opened the scoring. You talked about the Lafferty goal. I thought the rest of the first period and the first 10 minutes of the second, there were opportunities for the Canucks, but ultimately they didn't make the most of those opportunities. And then the two quick goals by the Kings at 3-1, you know, we talked to players afterwards about the mindset going to the third period, knowing that you needed two against the Los Angeles Kings in one period, when to that point they hadn't scored more than one against the Kings in any of their three games. And I guess if there was a disappointment for me, it was those first 15 minutes of the third period. They had one shot on goal. Like, how can that make sense to anybody? Like, look desperate. If the Kings lock you down, hey, you tip your hat to them. But make it difficult on them. And I didn't think the Canucks did enough of that in the first 15 minutes. And I wrote a column that's up at Canucks Army. While I didn't think the Canucks top players played their best, I didn't think it was Rick Tocchet's finest moment. And this guy has pushed just about every button and has been above reproach most nights in the work that he has done. Still a presumptive front runner to win the Jack Adams as coach of the year, but he went to the line blender and some of his decisions in that third period didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like a guy like Pia Suter, who doesn't score a lot, but the numbers show he makes JT Miller and Brock Besser better. And for whatever reason, when you're down and you need some offense, and he stuck to Suter as the third line center and played him with a bunch of different wingers. He went away from Hoglander and Garland with Pettersson, and that line's been working. Even if it wasn't working in the first 40 minutes, I still think I would have given those guys a little more leash. He tried Lotto line at one point, but look, Phil DiGiuseppe is your second line winger. That he went away from that one. That was the right call. But I just felt like he was grasping as much as his team was last night. And ultimately, to see Nikita Zadorov as a front net front, like that's kind of fun. But again, it felt like a reach. It's something we haven't seen from Rick Tocchet all year long. And whatever he threw at the wall, it didn't work. So for me, I didn't, like, you know, you take Elias Lindholm out of the lineup, and we've already said this team is one scoring winger short, and you can see like how quickly depth becomes an issue for the Vancouver Canucks with just one sort of top nine guy out of the mix. So yeah, it was just odd. It had a strange feel. Part of that was Brock Besser just didn't have it last night, and I know he scored, but he was having a tough night on the first Los Angeles goal in the back check, the penalty that he took on Drew Doughty, didn't have a shot attempt through 40 minutes. So I get where Rick Tocchet's coming from. He's trying his best to find something, anything that's going to spark his hockey club. But it was just curious to me the way that he went about his business in that third period. Bottom line is they came up a goal short. Give the Kings credit. The Canucks have yet to play with the lead at any, forget the scoring the first goal. They have yet to play the lead against the Los Angeles Kings. And that just makes life really, really difficult on you. Not a lot of fun to watch, but also not a lot much fun to play against. And they've got one more meeting with the Kings in Los Angeles on April the 6th. And then quite possibly they see them again come playoff time. Like, it's not at all out of the question that they could run into the Kings in that opening round. And if so, I think there'd be some concern in this market.
J-Pat, you alluded to with Lindholm and Joshua, of course, out, there's not a lot of quality top six, top nine winger options. Do you think if they enter the Dallas game and Lindholm and Joshua are still out, that perhaps Vasily Podkolzin is a player that you maybe give more of a look to, perhaps maybe even in the spot that PDG started the game?
Yeah, it kind of feels like it's time. I mean, Podkolzin's been hitting everything that moves and now is starting. He had an assist and then they took it away. Like, he didn't get an assist on the Lafferty goal officially, but we all know that he did a lot of the heavy lifting there. He's starting to play with confidence and it does feel like the offense is coming a little bit. Now, they've moved him lower in the lineup than where he started a couple of weeks back. And I think some of that was to take the pressure of finding the score sheet. They just wanted him to be physical and win his puck battles and all those kinds of things. But he's a 10th overall pick. Like, you can't sweep the expectations entirely under the rug with this guy. At some point, he scored 14 and is a rookie. I'd kind of like to see him get a little bit of a run with JT Miller and Brock Besser. PDG, and again, you know, if you want Pia Suter as a third line center, somebody's got to play up higher in the lineup. When I saw them line up at practice on Sunday, and it kind of gave the indication that they were preparing to go to battle without Elias Lindholm. And, you know, we've talked throughout the season that even though he had nice training camp and earned his spot, that the idea of PDG as a top six winger on this team wasn't ideal. And he did nothing like a lot of them last night, certainly offensively. and barely played in the third period when they were chasing the hockey game. So, yeah, I think I'm ready to see Pod Colson get a little bit of a bump there and see what he can do. We saw Archdeep Baines was given an opportunity to play with JT Miller and Brock Besser at one point. So, you know, Rick Tocchet hasn't been afraid to try some of that kind of stuff. And I think JT Miller's always had glowing reviews of Vasily Pod Colson and enjoyed playing with him and likes what he's seen from him. So, yeah, I kind of get the feeling that time is now. Why not? I also just thought it was really curious, again, you know, if they, and they know more than we do about Lindholm, but my sense here, full day off for the team, then a practice day, we'll get a better idea on practice at UBC on Wednesday. But if they have to go with Lindholm again, like, Nils Åman's a center. Could you not just slide Nils Åman to the fourth line center position and free Suter up to move up higher in the lineup if Pod Colson doesn't go into that spot? So we'll see what Rick Tocchet's thinking. We'll ultimately see what he and the coaching staff thought of the way things shook down against the Los Angeles Kings. But they need more from the top end guys in those games. They just got to find a way to break through. But as we said, they came up a goal short. Both teams got a lucky bounce. And, you know, it's just a steep hill to climb when you spot the Kings a two-goal lead like the Canucks did.
J-Pat, a lot of the discussion in this market right now, and we've had plenty of it on our show as well, but we haven't had a chance to get your take on it yet, I don't think. Do you have an ideal first-round opponent for the Vancouver Canucks, especially in light of maybe what we saw from the game last night?
Yeah, I still think the Vegas Golden Knights aren't the Stanley Cup champs of last spring. They still hold the title, and until somebody knocks them off, they are the reigning champs. But I've made this point before. They got off to an 11-0-1 start. I think people forget. Like, back then, the story was no cup hangover in a place like Vegas, and they won 11 of the first 12 games. Since then, they have been a 500 hockey club over a 55-game sample, and they haven't had the goaltending on a lot of nights. Obviously, they've had some injuries, but they just don't look like that wrecking machine that they were last spring when they rolled to the Stanley Cup final. You know, can they flip the switch? Can they get those good vibes back? They've got experience. They've got the pedigree. And ultimately, we'll see how many guys come racing off LTIR in time for... I saw people joking that if the playoffs get bumped up 2 days, oh, well, Vegas is going to have to figure out a way, get those guys healthy 2 days earlier. I still think, and I think, and you were there that night at T-Mobile not that long ago. Like, that was an impressive performance by the Canucks. They walked in through the front door and beat the Golden Knights. And people were saying, like, you know, let's see the Canucks win some of these games against playoff opponents. That was a good night for the Vancouver Canucks. They got an early lead. They built on it. They were stingy defensively. Thatcher Demko was good when he had to be. I still think, like, I think this Los Angeles team, when they get locked in, and it's not just the Canucks, they can cause teams fits. And you do wonder if they get into the minds of the Canucks. You know, if St. Louis somehow was to reel in Vegas, and obviously that was a bit of a death blow last night, so it is looking less and less like St. Louis is going to be a factor here. I think, for as crazy as it may sound, I think if you're picking an opponent in that first round, you take your chances against a Stanley Cup champ that just isn't on form. Maybe they get it back, but I like the matchup against Vegas more than I do from what I've seen in three games against the Los Angeles Kings.
I always go back to Nashville. Like, it's just, they're getting hot at the right time. So it's a hard decision, and you almost don't want to pick your poison. Right. And I also think, Jeff, that this team should have a bit of swagger about them and say, hey, you know what? We're the best team in the West. We're the best team in the Pacific, whatever you want to say. Like, we could take any of these teams, and it's not who are we, you know, looking forward to matching up to. It's those teams that shouldn't be wanting to match up against us.
Well, it's important to remember, guys, the Canucks still have two to go against Vegas here in the regular season. Like, they're going to have a big say in ultimately where Vegas finishes and if Vegas does finish in the playoffs. But again, getting that win last night in St. Louis was huge for the Golden Knights, because that gives them a little bit of breathing room against the Blues in the playoff chase. So now it is a question of where the dust settles and ultimately who slots where. But two still head to head. So I think, you know, this is the thing for the Canucks. Like, I didn't ever expect that they were going to run the table on the 9-game homestand. And when they lost to Colorado and then lost to Washington, obviously there were two losses, but they responded from those with three straight wins. And it kind of felt to me like if they can get two of the three games this week, it's a 6-2-1 homestand at this time of the year. Oilers kind of spinning their wheels a little bit. I kind of felt like 6-2-1, 13 of a possible 18 points would allow the Canucks to maintain that cushion atop the Pacific Division. So then they go and they lose to the Kings. Like, it puts some heat on the Vancouver Canucks now at the tail end of the homestand here. You got a Dallas team that's coming in battling for top spot in the conference. Like, that's not going to be easy. One of the highest scoring teams in the National Hockey League. They're in San Jose tonight, and then they'll be here on Thursday. And if it doesn't go well for the Canucks against the Stars, like, suddenly that game against Anaheim is like an absolute can't slip on the banana peel kind of game at the tail end of a homestand. You know, a Sunday afternoon, those early starts haven't always been friendly to the Vancouver Canucks. So, you know, if they want to finish 6-2-1 on the homestand, it's still there for them. But now they have to beat the Dallas Stars and then take care of business against Anaheim on Sunday afternoon. So, good challenge on Thursday. More time off between these games here, full rest day and then a practice day. And, you know, we'll see what they look like against the Stars on Thursday night.
Jeff, just going back to the game a little bit here. Case Smith's been really good since Thatcher Demko went down. Is it safe to say that last night was maybe his worst performance since he's taken over as the Canucks starter?
I guess I would like to have seen him smother the rebound on the Kopitar goal. You know, and Soucy putting the triple bounce off Carson Soucy and in, like, not a whole lot that DeSmith can do there. So I'm not hanging him out to dry. And really on that first goal, Fiala, the breakdown's all over the place. Again, the Canucks were just off. Like, you know, didn't have a man on the ice. They basically gave LA an in-game power play because the Canucks were slow on the change there. And Fiala's not going to miss when he has half the net to shoot at the way he did. So, you know, in terms of the goals that got past him, really it was the Kopitar one. And it was just, and I still haven't seen a great look. And I don't know if you guys did, like, did Byfield deflect it? Or is that a puck that DeSmith should have been able to trap against his body and not leave lying around? Because ultimately it squirts free to the back post. And that's when Kopitar swooped in from behind the net and tapped it in. But, you know, look, he's aggressive. He comes out. We saw two of those blue paint kind of goals last night. He's not the biggest goaltender in the world. And I think tries to compensate for that a little bit by being aggressive and playing at the top of the paint and that kind of stuff. But that does leave a little bit of room in behind him. So I'm not pinning that one on him necessarily. As I said, there was a bounce each way. The Besser goal kind of negated the second Los Angeles goal. I thought Casey Smith did what he had to do to give the Canucks a chance to pull this game out. Look, they make it 3-2 with 4 minutes to go. And yes, they pressured at that point. But I'm not sure that I'm hanging this on Casey DeSmith. Ultimately Cam Talbot made, you know, one more save than he did, but DeSmith's been fine. And, you know, in my world, he's going to run it back out there again on Thursday against Dallas. I do think if they beat the Stars on Thursday that you probably would see Artur Szilas for the first time this season against the Ducks on Sunday afternoon. I do wonder though, if they don't beat the Stars and go back to the scenario I just mentioned where, you know, the game against Anaheim then takes on a little more significance at some point. I do think they've got the back-to-backs next week, right? In Vegas and Arizona. I would assume you split those. I think in Artur Szilas' best interest to get him a game before he has to get thrown in there. So we'll see how things shake down the rest of this week. But I think I can answer your question that was it his poorest performance of the homestand? Maybe. And yet in saying that, I still don't think he was responsible for the ultimate outcome of that hockey game.
What do you think the thought process was behind the coaching staff mixing up the D pairs? And how do you think the new look D pairs looked last night?
Yeah, I think, and Rick Tocchet was asked about it after the game. I think it was opponent driven harm in as much as they know how the LA Kings want to play the aggressive forecheck. And I think it was trying to spread their puck movers out a little bit and put Hronek on one pair and Hughes on the other. And I have to say, I know they lost the hockey game. Quinn Hughes skated miles last night. And that's not a news flash because he does it most nights. But I thought he was incredible. Unfortunately, like his team, just no finish there. And a lot of his forays into the offensive zone didn't amount to much. But, you know, for a team that loves to pressure like the Kings do, Hughes was just I think, near the top of his game. And again, that's saying something just in terms of being a one-man breakout machine. So ultimately, the game dictated that when they were down in the third period, then they go back to Hughes Hronek. So I wasn't surprised about that. You know, was there enough of a sample size otherwise to get a true read on the defensive pairings? Yeah, I mean, defensively, again, the Canucks were fine last night. Like, you know, I still think you're going to see a lot of Hughes and Hronek. And did you see, like, Quinn Hughes played the final 3 minutes and 57 seconds of the hockey game? Came off the ice once in the final 5.5 minutes. So, you know, they were leaning on him, and he's their best chance to generate the goal that you're looking for to equalize. But, no, I mean, defensively, they're fine. I thought Zadorov, the big hit on Lizotte early in the game, I thought, you know, that's what you want from Nikita Zadorov, try to set the tone there. Susie and Cole had their moments as well, although interesting with Quinn playing as much as he did in third, Carson Susie only played 12 minutes of the hockey game. So, you know, he's not going to generate offense as you're down and you're trailing. Somebody's going to have to sit, and ultimately it was Carson Susie, but that jumped off the page as much as Quinn Hughes in his 26 and a half minutes did. So did Carson Susie, only playing 12 minutes and I think three in the third period. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think in some ways, 10 games to go, maybe this is the time to experiment. And yet you saw that they had to abandon the experiment when they were down and chasing the hockey game.
Jeff, good stuff as always. Thanks so much for joining us. And we will chat with you next week in playoffs. Playoffs are just around the corner.
Yeah, we just need a start date.
And in other news, Mark Stone's start date has been moved up as well. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks.
There he is, Jeff Patterson. You can hear him after every Canucks game on Rinkwide Vancouver. Harm, you and I are going to be making some appearances. April's tough, man. April's tough for us to make some appearances on Rinkwide Vancouver, but I'm hoping we're able to eventually, and of course, all through the playoffs as well. Always a good time over on Rinkwide Vancouver, wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's get to, this is what I wanted to get to, was Lekkerimäki. Jonathan Lekkerimäki's first practice as a Vancouver Canuck. Well, Abbotsford Canuck. I keep saying this. You know what I'm saying. He's with the organization now, and he's had his first practice. And I was there. I was in attendance at the Abbotsford Center today. Couple interesting things to note, Harmon. I'll kind of go through them because I have done a lot of prep here. This is also my first chance to see Elias Pettersson. I'll talk about him as well. But on Jonathan Lekkerimäki, he was skating with John Stevens and Arshdeep Bains. Those are two of Abbotsford's like most trusted, defensively sound forwards. That made me think that, okay, with Abbotsford being in Colorado to take on the Colorado Eagles on Friday and Saturday, he's for sure getting into the game. Like, he's getting in there. And then what made me think that even more was when they showed power play units, he was on PP2. And for those on the YouTube live show, you can see it. He's getting work in the bumper. He's getting work in the bumper spot on the second power play unit. Looked right at home there. I asked him afterwards if he's comfortable playing there because he has obviously played with the one-timer option at the World Juniors and throughout his time in Sweden. But he did also play the bumper during his time in the SHL with Örebro, who I learned how to pronounce their name today. Örebro. It's like Höglander. It's like the O with the umlaut. It's pronounced Örebro. Anyways, moving right past that. Yeah, he was in the bumper spot, and I found that to be interesting along with him playing with Baines, and Stevens. Abbotsford dressed 11 forwards last week, so it feels like there's a spot for him to take, but Jeremy Colleton was very non-committal to him playing this weekend. Also really, really wanted to temper expectations. He talked about how guys in the AHL sometimes need some time if they're coming over from Sweden or vice versa. Like, he talked about guys that go from the AHL to Sweden and they have trouble. Jeremy Colleton being one of them, and not necessarily having trouble, but like, Colleton spent time in Sweden. He's got a lot of contacts in Sweden. So he was keeping up. Like, Colleton knows what's going on with these prospects and he was keeping up with their seasons quite a bit. Grady, do we have the audio from Colleton? Okay, we only have Lekir Mackey. Colleton had some good stuff. So, Grady, if you could get Colleton's audio, that'd be good. But anyways, basically what Colleton was saying was just that if he scores a hat trick in his first game as an Abbotsford Canuck, you need to temper expectations. If he has a bad game and goes -2, you need to temper expectations. Like, you need to calm down. So he was kind of preaching this idea that, look, he's a young prospect. He's going to take time, and you don't want to be making these sweeping judgments. And like, he was asked what he thought of Lekir Mackey's first practice and any takeaways that he had about Lekir Mackey after his first practice. And he just kind of laughed it off. He was like, no, you know, it's one practice. I don't really have much, but we did talk to Lekir Mackey as well. And he was telling us, you know, just how excited he was to be there, how the guys were making him feel at home. It was really nice to be able to talk to him, a man of very few words. And Grady, I think you have the audio of this, so we'll just play the full 4 minutes of Jonathan Lekir Mackey's first media availability as a Canuck that wasn't at a development camp. This is since he turned pro.
Nice to just get back on the ice, John.
Yeah, it was 1 week ago and was so nice, so felt good.
Yeah. How was the travel coming over?
Long, but not too bad, so it was okay.
Get a chance to work out with the Sedins. I know you got to work with the Sedins at development camp, but what did you think about getting back to work with them?
Yeah, very funny. They talked to me a lot and wanted to help me, so it was nice.
What's Elias told you about Abbotsford so far?
Not too much, but oh yeah, we will see. Maybe go to the shopping center today. Maybe.
What did you think of your first practice? How did it feel?
Felt pretty good. Yeah.
And just meshing with the guys, you're feeling at home already, or how you feel?
Yeah, they welcome me very well, so feels really good.
We just talked to us about the small ice, that you just come here, first practice on small ice. What kind of a difference does that make for you as a player? What adjustments do you have to make?
I think the guys are closer to each other. I think you have to, you know, read the game before you get the puck and be more aware where you have your guys.
I guess here you're getting a chance to work out and stay fit for the World Championships. I know that would be a big thing for you. What are you trying to do here to keep warm before the World Championships?
I mean, watch and learn how the guys play and practice, and feel how it is to play on the small ice.
Could you feel it just in one practice? Was it different or what?
No, it wasn't. No, not too. Pretty similar, I think.
What are your first impressions of the guys, just skating with them? What stood out to you? Pace, the speed, anything that stand out to you from this time on the ice with the guys here?
Yeah, I think the pace was high. I play with Baines, and I haven't met him before, so yeah, we chat a bit, and first practice was pretty good.
Just can't stop him from talking. Dude loves to talk. Sino Chick asked this, because I mentioned Elias Patterson was there as well. Do the Sedins know that DPD thought they played junior hockey in the early 80s? Did you see this video, Harm? They had Lekir Mackey. Also, I think you're muted. But they had Lekir Mackey, Pettersson, and two other World Juniors teammates there doing trivia about Swedish hockey, and they were like, these players, I think they even said brothers, these brothers brought home gold in the 1982 World Juniors. And Elias Pettersson writes down the Sedins, and you just see Lekir Mackey go, dude, they didn't play that long ago.
Yeah, I remember seeing that was so funny.
Oh, it was the best. But yes, like I said, like Karamaki, the advice I was given was that if you give him a yes or no question, he will take the option. Like he will he will give you a yes or a no. But no, he was great. It was good to get to meet him in person for the first time and get to talk to him. Jeremy Colleton, I think we have it now, Grady. Jeremy Colleton spoke a little bit about getting Le Karamaki on the ice for the first time as well.
Well, it's just great to get him here and kind of the next step for him just to be comfortable and be around our team and see how it's going to be. And obviously he knows a bunch of guys from development camp, which is great. He knows us, knows the staff, but it's always going to be an adjustment. So the quicker we could get him here and get him in the group and playing hockey, it's only going to help him.
Had Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, here as well for a little bit. Now you've had some more practices to see him. What do you think of him so far?
Yeah, same thing. It's only going to help him going forward to the experience he's gaining just being around the team and being in practice and seeing how it is, seeing how it's what the environment's like, what it's like to prepare all week for a game. And you know, I'm not sure we take it day by day as far as who's going to play and whatnot, but the best way for him to prepare to play is to be with us and practice and feel that competitiveness and the pace, and so we'll just see where it goes.
And I guess this is a developmental league. You're a guy who likes to get out with these players. Do you take it on as a challenge a little bit, or what do you kind of evaluate the situation with your job getting these guys to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same for everyone. You know, it's not we're trying to develop everyone we have. Certainly, it's exciting to get guys like that in, and we want to help them get to the next level as quickly as possible. There's a process to go through, too. No, it's not, you can't just pick a guy and be like, yeah, that guy, we're going to give him everything, and he's going to make it now. You know, there's steps to take, and there's adversity to get through as well. I personally think that if you don't face adversity along the way, then when you get there and then it comes, you don't know how to handle it. So that's part of being in this league. It's a hard league, and you can earn what you get. And if you get through it, then it's going to make you better on the other side.
I really find that that answer very interesting, Harm, because I was already getting this on Twitter too, and I replied to someone that said it, but they were talking about how Colleton's, he's too focused on wins and losses. He needs to be focused more on development. I just want to say I have very little doubt that Jeremy Colleton knows what he's doing when it comes to developing players. And I know, look, people are looking at Klimovich and saying, oh, well, why is he scratched? Why is he on the fourth line? Because he's played very badly. He's played awful this year, and he played really well last year, and he was getting rewarded with ice time and different opportunities last year. Just because a guy was drafted high doesn't mean that he's going to play. And the question that I ask to these people, Harm, is, first of all, it's not Utica anymore where you're hearing about prospects just losing all love for the game and leaving the sport altogether or whatever. Like, we're not hearing anything like that anymore. That's not happening. But what we are seeing is that these guys that are getting the opportunities are getting opportunities because they're playing the game that the way the Canucks want to play. And when we talk about organizational alignment, we hear that, yes, Abbotsford and the Vancouver Canucks run the exact same way. When you go up from Abbotsford to Vancouver, they're playing the same systems, they have the same expectations, and it's not a shock for those players coming up. What's your end goal if you're giving a guy, and I don't mean to single out Klimovich, take any prospect, like Ratu's played a lot recently because he's played well, but take any prospect, for example. What's your end goal of just throwing them out there, regardless of how they're performing, regardless of how much effort they're putting in the staples of the game, regardless of all of that? What's your end goal if you're just saying, okay, you are going to keep getting these opportunities while we hold everybody else to a higher standard? That player is not going to go up to the NHL and be efficient. Like, that's not how development's going to work. That's not how it's going to work for the Vancouver Canucks, because the Vancouver Canucks have a standard of how they expect their players to play. So if you want to go create a bunch of Andre Kuzmenkos, and again, not to single out players, but you know what I mean, if you want to go make one-dimensional players, go ahead. But if you want to take a guy who was one-dimensional in Nils Höglander and turn him into somebody that can be an effective top six scorer under Rick Tocchet, under this head coach, and on this NHL team, then keep Jeremy Colleton in Abbotsford, because that's what you're going to keep getting, is that kind of development, that kind of confidence building, and those guys coming up to the NHL and knowing exactly how they need to play.
Well, the key there, as you mentioned, is with guys like Höglander, now Pod Colson, even the strides that Archdeep Baines has made since signing as CHL free agent, there's proof of concept that they can turn players that have the potential into something legitimate. And in the case of Klimovich, I mean, even before the season started, it was rough for him in Penticton. It was rough for him in training camp. He was consistently bobbling pucks, making mistakes even in elementary drills. So I honestly don't lay any blame for Klimovich's developmental struggles this season on the coaching staff and on Abbotsford, especially now that you've got the Sedins and you're investing so many resources there. Utica was a totally different thing where players, and you would speak to agents that represented clients on that team, it felt like it was a totally different world. Right, you're on the East Coast of the U.S. in some small town where you feel so disconnected from the main team. The GM of the actual Vancouver Canucks only comes down there once a year because it's that far away, whereas here, quite commonly, you'll see Jim Rutherford or Patrick Alvin or Ryan Johnson, of course, who manages Abbotsford at these games. There actually feels like there's a pulse. It's a night and day difference, and I think they've definitely earned a lot of leash and trust as they develop young players and prospects.
Yeah, I think trust is a great way to put it, Harm. Trust from the fan base and also trust from the players. Like, the players know why they're being sat. Players know why they're playing high in the lineup, and not just why in the immediate instance why it's happening. Like, they know what the end goal is. If the end goal is to get to the NHL, they know that as long as they're a part of this organization, they're going to have to play a certain way, right? Like, this organization now has hopes of winning. There's not going to be any of these, okay, unless you're going to go score 40 goals, but if you're playing in the AHL, you're probably not going to be a 40-goal scorer. Just throwing that out there. So again, I don't want to go into Klimovich too much because Kieran Versation is pointing it out. Stankoven and the Stars are coming into town later this week. And again, I'm not trying to bag on Klimovich or whatever. I'm just using him as an example because it feels like that's what I'm seeing on Twitter, is people using him as an example and his diminished deployment this year as an example of, look, Colleton's worried about wins, not player development. What's Klimovich going to develop into if he keeps making mistakes and keeps making, you know, low effort plays and you keep churning him out there in the top six and he's not scoring? Like, you're putting him out in this role where he's not producing, he's not doing anything defensively, he's making a bunch of mistakes. What is he going to develop into? Answer me that. If you make endless mistakes with no consequences and no understanding of why you're... Anyways, he's a good kid.
Klimovich is catching so many strays.
I'm not trying to throw it all at Klimovich. I'm saying this is what I was seeing on Twitter, was these people, you know, getting on Jeremy Colleton about it because of Klimovich. And I'm sorry. Like, again, I'm not trying to rag on Klimovich, and I know it is coming across that way. Okay, another thing. I'm just going to get to it. Canucks practice today. Nikita Tolopilo, man. I know I've talked a lot about Artis Silovs. Tolopilo is a big boy, and I've seen him in person before, so I shouldn't be shocked. But, man, he's... Keep an eye on Nikita Tolopilo. That's all I'll say. He is a mammoth in the net. Like, his hips are at the crossbar. He is ginormous, and he is so lanky, and he has such long limbs. Like, his arms dangle to his knees. It's quite unbelievable seeing him in person, and just the way he moves as well. He's someone to watch, I think, Nikita Tolopilo in the Abbotsford net for now, while Archer Seelovs is up with the big club. And as Jeff alluded to, I think Seelovs is going to get into a game either Sunday or next week when there's the back-to-back games against Vegas and the Arizona Coyotes. Okay, last thing for me, Harm, on Canucks practice, and we have to get to anyone else. I've taken up a lot of time here. Get your anyone else's in, folks. But Akito Hirose played on the right side of a pairing with Elias Pettersson. We've talked about how crowded that Abbotsford blue line is right now. You got Christian Willanen, you got Guillaume Brisebois. Who am I forgetting? Oh, and Matt Irwin, all on the left side. Like, all those guys are playing on the left side. I think it's going to be hard for both Elias Pettersson and Akito Hirose to get into the lineup, but even just one of those guys, like, it's going to be hard for those guys to find ice time. I think we'll see where it goes. It's been a really disappointing season. He's had some injuries as well for Akito Hirose, but I'm curious what the Abbotsford Canucks lineup looks like, you know, especially come playoffs. And if Pettersson or Hirose, I definitely doubt it's both of them. You know, which one of those guys gets a look in the playoffs? Did you have anything you wanted to talk about when it came to Abbotsford?
No, I think you nailed it. By the way, I love that the Colleton and Lekaramäki interviews were basically old school Canucks conversation. Faber and you just rotating questions. It was like 90% you guys.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing is we were the only media there, and then there was Global. Like, there was a Global reporter and news and camera, and then it was Faber and I. So it really reminded me of a Canucks old Canucks conversation, because Faber was talking to a person from Abbotsford, and he was asking most of the questions. So it did really remind me of an old Canucks combo. Okay, the last thing, actually, that I needed to mention, I asked Lekaramäki outright how long he was going to be here, because I noticed, Harm, that Sweden's camp for the World Championships doesn't start until April 15th, right? Like, it's not starting for a while. And I saw, the initial reports, I think it was Dollywell, reported 7 to 10 days that he'd be here. He's going to be here longer than that. I asked him today how long he's going to be here, and he said 2 to 3 weeks. And that kind of lines up with what I'm thinking when it comes to Sweden's World Championship schedule. And they have like a scrimmage tournament against Finland that they're going to do on April 15th. But I would assume their camp opens like April 10th, April 12th, around there. But I was just poking around the Sweden hockey website, and yeah, it doesn't start until mid-April, and Lekaramäki kind of confirmed it for me when I asked him about it, just that, yeah, he's going to be here 2-3 weeks, so it's not just going to be like a short cup of coffee, get a couple skates in. This is the only home practice that the Canucks have this week. They're traveling tomorrow, and then, of course, they play Colorado on Friday and Saturday. Like I said, we don't know if Lekaramäki is going to get into a game. I'd really expect him to. I'd like him to, but Colleton was very, very non-committal to him getting into a game, so we shall see. But yeah, and we have the schedule there. You can kind of see it. April 15th is that first tournament, April 15th to 19th. Obviously, he will want to be there by then, but 2-3 weeks, it looks like, for Lekaramäki to stay in Vancouver. I should say in Abbotsford. And I just want to pull up their schedule as well, because I'm trying to figure out when they play after that. They play March 30th is their last game of the month, and that is this Saturday. And then they play on Tuesday, April 2nd at home against the Manitoba Moose. They've got a bit of a homestand there until April 7th. So if you look at their schedule in April, Tuesday, April 2nd and Wednesday, April 3rd against the Manitoba Moose, and then Saturday, April 6th and Sunday, April 7th against the Coachella Valley Firebirds, you would expect, or I would expect at least, that Lekaramäki would get into one of those. And then by the time I think the Canucks head back out on the road against the Calgary Wranglers on the 11th of April, I think he's gone by then. But that's like six games that he has the opportunity to get into. I have to think that played a role in him even coming to Vancouver. I don't think it's going to be, well, I know it's not going to be just a week thing or 10 days. It's going to be more than that. And I would think that this kind of hints at the fact that he's going to play a game. And I would be really shocked if he doesn't at least get into a game.
Especially because there are back-to-backs there, right? So you're going to have skaters that on the second leg are not going to have the same level of juice. So it's not just an opportunity for Lekaramäki to draw into a regular game, but also give you an extra dose of energy, help you from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. And I mean, hey, you could sell some tickets. You might get some more media out there if you he makes his debut at home. We'll see. We'll see when the Manitoba Moose are in town. But yeah, that was it from Abbotsford. I just wanted to make sure I got to that. Running a little late, but let's get to anyone else presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters NATION and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms do apply. Okay, we've got a lot already, Harm. People are talking about Klimovich. People are talking about Seelovs. People are talking about Shohei Ohtani. And people are talking about Thatcher Demko. Where do you want to start? And I'm going to guess it's not Shohei Ohtani. I'm going to throw one at you, Harm. This is an interesting one for both of us to kind of chew on a little bit and get to here. This one from Jesse C. In your guys' opinions, what is the ideal percentage in Abbey for seasoned pros versus true prospects? And how many extra bodies do you think are best at each position to keep mixing guys in and out? This is a good question. And I'll kind of go over what I was saying earlier about, you know, player accountability and how I think that's been very important for what they're trying to build in Abbotsford. Like, it's not just a free ride where you're top prospect, so you're going to go power play one, you're going to get all these opportunities. You need a mix, obviously. And I think what you want, the ideal mix, is whatever it takes for your top prospects that you believe in to not be pushed out by somebody when they're playing at their best, if that makes sense. Like, there was no, like, Adam Gaudette is a good example. Like, Adam Gaudette's tearing up the AHL this year. But if he was on a team, and I'm picking him because friend of the show and he's tearing up the AHL, but if you have a bunch of veteran players who are playing well at the top of your lineup and helping you win games, but they're also stopping a guy who maybe is playing really well for his age and should be up higher in the lineup, I think then that's maybe a little bit too much, and you have to watch that mix. I think the mix is fine as long as guys like Nils Höglander and Vasily Podkolzin are able to get prominent roles if they earn it, and not setting that earnings bar too high where you're saying, okay, you have to lead the AHL in scoring if you want to go past our top line winger, because that's who we have right now. And I think the Canucks have done a really good job of that.
Yeah, and it's always a mix also of, it's not just your prospects, but also you're trying to make sure that you have enough serviceable NHL depth as well. And what I mean by that is, last year, for example, when the Canucks ran into all those injuries when Rick Tocchet was first taking over, the Canucks were able to bring up guys like Willanen, Juulsen, Breezeball, and they actually held the fort pretty well. And you were sort of thinking, okay, if we get to a point where the Canucks, where they are right now, where they're a quality team and they haven't been ravaged by too many injuries, knock on wood, this year, but in future years, if you run into a lot of injuries, you also want to make sure that you're deep enough with enough veteran talent that you're not going to be in a lot of trouble if you run it into two or three blue line injuries, for example. And I think in balancing both of those priorities, the Canucks have done a pretty effective job. The other consideration is, it's going to be contingent also on how many prospects do you actually have in your pipeline that are in Abbotsford. That's going to dictate, okay, how veteran heavy do we go in terms of curating Abbotsford to maybe be more in service of our NHL team and having quality call-up options versus leaving opportunities open for our young guys to develop. So it's balancing those priorities. And honestly, I think this management group has done a pretty good job of that so far.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of that fine line that you have to walk. And I don't even know what line they were walking. They were falling on their face when they had it out in Utica. They were told to do the line walk, and then they just fell over and they never recovered. So it's good that they're out in Abbotsford, of course. So I guess you could say they've recovered because they've moved it out to Abbotsford and things are good out there in Abbotsford. Even if the team's not playing that well this year. Like, that's the other thing. We haven't really talked about it. They can't win the first game. Like, every game in the AHL is basically a back-to-back series. They're like 1-9 or something, and I should have it on hand. But their record in the first game is horrible. And Cody, if you're still in here, maybe you can drop it in the YouTube live chat. But the first game of back-to-backs, they're horrible. And then the second game, they kind of wake up. And Colton talked about that today as well, about them just needing to prepare better and the coaching staff needing to get their players more ready today. And another thing I want to bring up was I saw Marco Terenius today. He is just an extension of Ian Clark. It's like just running through the exact same drills. And it's just pretty funny to see, like, the exact same drills you see Ian Clark doing with the Canucks goalies at the NHL level. They're doing the exact same ones down apps for, like, exact same practice routine, like, down to the T. So I'm sure when a guy gets called up and he's a netminder, he knows exactly what he's doing. And much like the players, that's gotta be pretty, pretty helpful. Okay. Let's get some anyone else's. And Grady said we have some from the Twitter and Facebook. So let's dive into those. Let's dive into some Twitter and Facebook questions. This one from Sports Philosopher Vancouver on Twitter. Can Canucks afford to have Garland babysit PD offensively? Feels like third line reunion is ideal. I don't know if I'd go that far per se, but
ouch.
Yeah, I know that it is a bit of an ouch, but I disagree on the third line reunion. Like, I really do think you need to keep, what's working together, right? And maybe if that line stops clicking, because historically, Harmon, you and I have had this conversation so many times, historically, Connor Garland and Elias Pettersson have not been able to find chemistry together, but they're able to right now, and I don't think you break that up while it's working.
Yeah, you continue to give it a bit more leash, and it's just difficult because when you have Lindholm and Joshua out, it limits your top nine options, and somebody's going to be left shorthanded somewhere. I think you stick with Pettersson and Garland for now and give them some more runway.
All right. Do we have any other ones from Facebook or Twitter, Grady? Yeah, there we go. Oh, yeah, Big Brody asking this. This is a question on everybody's mind. I wish we had the answer, but it's one we'll talk about. How minor is the Lindholm situation? Jeff kind of touched on it. Team day off today, but they will be practicing out at UBC tomorrow. We'll have an update on CanucksArmy.com as soon as it's given to us by head coach Rick Tocchet. But what we had heard most recently was that on Friday... No, not Friday. Yes. No, Sunday. There it is. On Sunday... Yeah, they practiced on Sunday, right? Am I going crazy? No, they did practice Sunday. Yeah, they did.
I think so.
They did. Okay, so on Sunday, Elias Lindholm was not at practice after playing on Saturday night against his former team, the Calgary Flames. Rick Tocchet saying that he's going to go get his test done. He's going to go meet with the specialist. And obviously, we saw the report from Elliot Friedman as well. We don't know the answer. And I think we're going to find out the answer tomorrow because in the time since then, the Canucks played and Lindholm was a scratch. So obviously, they didn't really talk much about it. We'll find out more tomorrow if Lindholm is absent from practice for sure. We'll hear something from the head coach, hopefully providing some more clarity on what the situation is. The one thing I'll say is Tocchet yesterday before the game said that he wasn't sure if they would need to shut down Lindholm. So we will see what the future has in store for Elias Lindholm here.
Yeah, it's not great when you even hear things like shut down and, ultimately, though, it's just about if you have to shut him down for the regular season, as long as he's good for the playoffs, who cares? It's just you want to make sure that he's good to go for the playoffs, because even if he's not producing offensively at the rate that you were hoping for when the Canucks first acquired him, what he does defensively in winning as many faceoffs as he does, especially as a right shot, what he does on the penalty kill, how he can help you defensively, those things matter, and he definitely makes his team better, even though he hasn't been at his best since the trade.
This is a question from Logan Van Dyke in the YouTube live chat. If Seelovs is supposed to be getting a game, are they planning on sitting Demko for the remainder of the season? I touched on this earlier, not earlier this show, but earlier in the month, I suppose. Demko, you're going to want to get him some starts. Like, Demko needs some regular season starts. You're not sitting him for the remainder of the season if he's healthy and saying, okay, game one of the playoffs, have at it, like, get in there. No, that's not going to happen. I put it at 3 to 4 starts you need for him to feel comfortable. He might tell you a different number. I'm sure he'll tell you whatever number he gets is enough for him to feel comfortable. But look, when you just look at what it takes for a goalie to get prepared in the preseason, not to mention that they have a lot of time in the summer where they're on the ice and doing a lot of things as well. 3 games is usually enough. I'd put it at 3 to 4, where I think Demko is going to feel at his most comfortable as he possibly can. We don't know when Demko's expected return is. It's like, what was the original reporting, Harm? Wasn't it 2 to 3 weeks or something?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he is sitting for the remainder of the regular season. And like you, I think at that point, there would be some question marks about how sharp is he going to be if you have him missing all this chunk of time and then immediately it's, okay, game one of the playoffs, pressure's on you. I'd be surprised, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see what updates we got on that from Tocchet as well, because he's been kind of vague about that too.
Yeah, and when the injury first happened, Tocchet was very adamant that he had no concern. Like, they were not worried at all that Demko was going to be ready for the playoffs. So, I mean, if he is out for the remainder of the season, again, I think that's a little premature to even talk about it. That's a setback. Like, that's a setback of all setbacks. If Demko's not ready by the end of the season or just ready for game one of the playoffs. And hey, by the sounds of it, those could be 2 days apart. So you don't have much leeway there. We'll see. We'll see when Demko gets in. But you're hoping that sooner rather than later, I think, for sure. And again, like, last time they talked about it, there was no concern that he'd be out for game one of the playoffs. So we'll see what's said tomorrow. We'll bring it to you tomorrow as well, and we'll talk about it. Here, let's see. Okay, this is from Captain Canuck. And Harm, it's directed at you, so we'll finish with this one. Harm, what did you think of Hughes retaliating with the slash after getting hit? Will Hughes be able to handle getting targeted in the playoffs?
I think he'll be fine. And honestly, yeah, you don't like to take a retaliatory penalty like that, but there was a lot of those slashes behind the play that the refs were letting go throughout that entire first period up until that, up until Hughes actually got called for one. So that's where with the officiating, and I don't want to criticize the refs again or say that it was a really bad call or anything, but that's where from a player's perspective, there's some inconsistency in the sense that you pretty much for the first, especially 5-10 minutes, let every slash, every little encounter behind the play go. And yet that one got called, that got singled out. I'm not too worried about Hughes and his frustration level and him not being able to manage his emotions.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I don't know. I know the bubble didn't count, but it still counted for something in my mind. And we'll see. Playoffs are coming, folks. Playoffs are coming, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But for now, we're going to sign off. For my co-host, Harmon Dial, and our technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Guadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.